This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
So I love a metaphor that says learning is a hike up a mountain. There's another one that says learning is a search for treasure. And both are metaphors that describe just how much education helps an individual scale to new heights and discover valuable and priceless pearls of wisdom. Education has broadened the horizons of many, many great men and women. It's also lifted many South Africans out of poverty. In fact, there is a direct correlation between higher university enrollments in the late 1990s and mid-2000s and the emergence of a black middle class. There is a direct correlation. So higher education is very important for the growth trajectory of South Africa. And yet many leading universities in this era seem to be in turmoil. And the question is, why is that? Perhaps they can help us answer this question. Anele Mdepa, who's the manager for student governance at Stellenbosch University, joined by Professor Gerald Wangenge Ouma, who's an education specialist and director of institutional planning at the University of Pretoria. So, Professor Wangenge Ouma, good morning.
Good morning to you and good morning to our listeners, Deranda. Thanks for having me on your program.
My pleasure. And Madam Anele Mdepa, good morning.
Mr.
Anele Mdepa. You can see I'm a youth. I'm thinking anybody who's Anele is an Anele Mdoda.
Morning, colleague.
My apologies. But thank you for that. Thank you for your time, Anele Mdepa. Let's start with you, simply because I'm in the naughty corner right now. I know you're from a competitor university, but when you're looking at the protests at Wits, and 2-3 weeks ago there were protests at UCT, and around the same time there were issues around student accommodation at the University of Pretoria, what do you think is actually happening on these esteemed campuses?
Thank you, colleagues. Before we start our conversation, just to mention a disclaimer that the views that I will be sharing here are solely mine and based also on my research and academic work.
We respect that.
Thank you so much. So I think, first of all, we need to acknowledge that the South Africa's higher education sector is in a very difficult situation. As we have clearly stated earlier on, that since the advent of democracy, there has been very progressive legislation in South Africa which speaks to access and success. And that legislation primarily then looks at the people who were previously disadvantaged by the laws of the previous regime and apartheid.
Yeah.
So what that has done in return, there's been a lot of, you know, students accessing universities across the country, in the former white institutions, but also in the former black institutions. And that has posed some serious challenges in these institutions because the design and the capacity in which they were originally designed, the current, you know, intake is just way too much. And this also speaks then to their financial muscle, financial sustainability. So this has really, really made things difficult for all universities across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that then leaves, you know, the challenge to the government, which really the government, I think, it made really good policies which speaks to social justice, but now the issue that I think is on the table is how do we then balance the scale in terms of the government funding higher education
And what we know, Anele Mdepa, is that over the last few years, perhaps the last 3 or 4 years, the government subsidy has declined for no malevolent reason other than the fact that, you know, inflation is what it is and the government doesn't have the money to increase its allocations to higher education. And so universities are having to come up with different fundraising methods, particularly relying on fee-paying students. Has this compounded the issue?
Absolutely, because if you look at the if you look at South Africa as a whole, the majority of the people in South Africa are black people.
Yeah.
And the black people we are referring to is what the legislation refers to as previously disadvantaged people, meaning that majority of black people in South Africa, unfortunately, cannot afford to pay for higher education. That is a fact that we cannot run away from. And then you look then at the other, you know, sector of the population that can afford. It's predominantly white people that can afford, middle class white people, but also some black people. So when you look at the numbers, they really, really, really don't assist in terms of the government, you know, putting solely the universities to address the issue of funding on their own.
All right. Let's bring you in, Professor Wangenge Omar. So clearly there's a historical context. Many people in the past couldn't access a higher education, couldn't qualify to come into universities. So you've got more demand for places at university, but fees are expensive, and so many students rely on subsidies, bursaries, and the like. That's the context. But two things have emerged in the WITS situation in particular. There's a term academic exclusion versus a term financial exclusion. And somewhere these two issues are compounded, because many students are saying they've got historical debt, school fees that they haven't been able to pay in the 2-3 years that they've been there, and so they are being excluded. And then some people are saying, no, you failed whilst you were here, and you're now occupying space that could be given to someone else because you haven't duly performed. How do these issues come together?
Thanks, Lerato. You ask a very important point. If we could just go back a little bit to the context that you've mapped. So you're right, and Anele has mapped the context also beautifully well. The thing is, when a system grows and diversifies and allows previously excluded groups into the higher education system, then what you see, not just in South Africa but across the world, you get a lot more students coming from marginalized and poor families coming into higher education. As many of them come in, naturally, then there's a need for support to be provided, financial support to be provided for these students, so that they're able to access higher education. And as you correctly pointed out, it helps with their upward mobility in terms of getting out of poverty. Now, you also touched on a very important point, which is around student debt, and that's quite critical. Currently, we're sitting with across the board, universities are sitting with about slightly more than 15 billion rand in student debt. Now, if you look at that in the context of plummeting, not really plummeting, that's a bit hyperbolic, but declining state funding, it creates a challenge for universities, you know, to stay afloat, to be sustainable, to continue providing good quality education, which all students who go to university deserve. And now, so what we're seeing happening here is a very complex dynamic. So on the one hand, as you correctly pointed out, we need to open up and get students to come in. But the students also deserve a good quality education. And a good quality education is expensive. You know, you have to pay the lecturers. You have to make sure that the lecture halls are enough to accommodate all the students. The equipment is there. That laboratory supplies are there. The libraries, books, and all those kinds of things. So it makes it quite expensive. And if I could just go back one little step. If you look at the changes that happened about 3 years ago, as you pointed out, let's say 2018 with the implementation of the fully subsidized funding regime. Now, government has put in a lot of money. unfortunately, the demand is just so high. Mm. The economy is not growing fast enough for governments to make more money to support more students.
Mm.
At the same time, as the economy behaves the way it's behaving, a lot more students fall into that category of, you know, households that require funding support. And so the complexity of the challenge continues growing. In terms of academic exclusion vis-a-vis financial exclusion, yes, a number of universities are saying, look, I mean, we need money, so you need to at least pay X amount of money for you to come in. But then, as you correctly pointed out, you know, in terms of academic exclusion, I mean, you know, it's specific to individual universities in terms of the academic requirement.
Mm.
Universities, educational institutions are about excellence.
Mm.
And you don't compromise on that. I'm in no way suggesting that, therefore, we should exclude students. But we have to have mechanisms in place to get students to excel in their studies.
Okay. There's a lot going on, and this is a staggering number, $15 billion in student debt. Some of the protesting students at WITS have said, clear up the student debt issues on that particular campus, but this is a broad issue across universities. And so as a mechanism for raising funds, universities are trying to attract more fee-paying students, whether your parents are paying the fees, whether there's a loan, a student loan, whether there's a bursary paid for by the corporate, the endowments. There's many, many ways to try to resolve this issue, but it's becoming quite untenable.
Thought-provoking conversations with Lerato Mbele, 9 a.m. to midday.
We're trying to understand what's happening at institutions of higher learning in South Africa. We're joined by Professor Gerald Wangenge Ouma from the University of Pretoria and Mr. Anele Mdepa from Stellenbosch University. I want to stay with you, Prof, and just to the issues of understanding South Africa's reality and that funding systems should be aligned to these realities. When the fees must pay, fees must fall, rather, protests emerged nearly 8 years ago. A concept emerged in South Africa called the missing middle, which were the students whose parents or families could afford to pay some of the tuition, but not all of the tuition. So they needed top-ups. And the conversation had always focused on affluent students who could afford to pay everything and poor students who needed full financial support. But there's a group in the middle who straddle this line. They can afford to pay something, but not everything. And often they're the ones caught up in the quandary. How has this been resolved, if at all?
No, it's part of the quandary, as you said. You know, the challenges that we're grappling with as a sector, you know, getting, making sure that all students who need some kind of support get the support. The challenge is that, as I mentioned earlier, given the magnitude of the challenge that we're confronted with, there doesn't seem to be sufficient funding in the system to make funding available to these students, the so-called missing middle students. As you would recall, the fee-free regime only applies to students from households that earn 350,000 rand per year and below. And now, just on that point, a study that was done a few years back seems to suggest that almost 86% of South African households, you know, are fall in this category.
Mm.
Now, of course, we know that most students who go to universities, quite a number of them would come from what you're describing as missing middle families.
Mm.
But just given the magnitude of the challenge, just to deal with those who are deserving, you know, I mean, those who fall in the 350,000 category, it's just so big that you know, there isn't a robust mechanism available at the moment to provide support to the missing middle students.
So, Anele Mdepa, another issue coming up is not just even the fees on the tuition side. It's even the shortage of accommodation, which is why we've seen students lying on pavements in sleeping bags outside the University of Pretoria campus, is that the universities don't seem to have prepared adequately, I don't know if that's fair, for the higher intake of students in this era where more and more students are applying to institutions of higher learning. And so they leave their hometowns in the Eastern Cape, in the Northwest Province, KwaZulu-Natal to come and get this education. And then they find that on top of the school fees and the books, they're going to need a place to stay. And that's an additional cost. And there isn't even sufficient supply, which is then driving up the accommodation prices.
Yeah, I think if you look at the South African universities, public universities, I think we have about 26 of those. And if you look at all of them, except for the newest universities, they were designed, let's say, as old as 50 years ago, some even before that. Some are like 100 years old, some of these universities. So we are talking about very old, you know, infrastructure here, which were designed at those times for a specific, you know, mandate, which was to serve specific races according then to the laws of the country. And then came democracy, which then opened the doors of learning for many, many black students. Mm. So these universities, how they were designed, they literally can take up to so much. So what is that? Again, it brings us back to the government's role. I think the government should partner with all higher education institutions in South Africa in terms of planning for the future, in terms of infrastructure development, accommodation provision, and so forth. Because literally the universities, according to the system that they use to raise funds, I don't think universities can absorb such huge, huge expenses on their own. So again, this requires partnership between the government, but also a social, you know, pact with the private sector to be part of the solution, because universities, unfortunately, alone cannot resolve the issue of accommodation.
I like what you're saying about the pact, Professor Wangenge Ouma. Let's talk about interesting fundraising mechanisms. So what's happened is that the government brings in a subsidy, which is meant to then help the university address some of its operating costs. The university then also has fee-paying students, which also puts money in the kitty. The universities can then tap into their networks of alumni to see if former students who are now professional somewhere can contribute through donations. And then there are endowments, and this is where the corporates come in. And that's generally been sort of how fundraising happens. But what tends to happen is that the universities that are older, more traditional, and have a healthy mix of affluent students are the ones that do this fundraising better than historically disadvantaged students in former homelands. So a UCT versus a UniVen, for argument's sake.
Look, it's about, there's quite a number of variables at play. You've touched on a number of them. If you're going to depend on your alumni, then, of course, you need to have a very broad and many of them willing to support. But more than that is what I would describe as institutional capacity, you know, to reach out to different groups or potential funders to kind of, you know, it doesn't just happen. You have to reach out. You have to mount campaigns and initiatives to get them to support. A lot of the money that comes into universities is usually kind of ring-fenced. When the money comes in, the alumni will say, we're giving you this money for student support, for example. Or they would say, we're giving you this money for you to run this kind of program. And so it's quite important that we kind of have a better sense of what the money that is coming into the universities is for. It's not like the block grants that universities receive from government. The other important point also in terms of the capacity to generate, you see, funders want value for their money. So universities have to demonstrate that if they get money from a particular funder, that they're going to have return on their investment. You know, so they need to put in place very robust systems to make sure that the money they get is used properly, and that people can see that the money they are giving to institutions is bearing fruit. But you're right. So there are those capacity imbalances that make certain institutions to be able to generate a lot more money compared to other institutions.
And very briefly, Anele Mdepa, just maybe drawing on experiences from some of the wealthier universities, what are the things that can be done to address this funding crisis? Could we start talking about auctions for cryptocurrency, crowdfunding? What are more modern ways of bringing in cash?
I think, as I said, you know, what is important is to sit around the table with all stakeholders from these universities, the communities in which these universities are located, including the government, the civic sector as well, to find sustainable ways in which can support these institutions financially. So I can't give you an exact answer right now, but literally a collective solution is needed by everyone involved in the higher education sector.
We're going to continue watching events on the ground because there are also deeper issues beyond finance, but we thank you for helping us just understand what's at the root, what's at the heart of some of the problems in institutions of higher learning. Thanks to you, Professor Gerald Wangenga Ouma, an education specialist and the Director of Institutional Planning at the University of Pretoria, joined by the Manager for Student Governance at Stellenbosch University, Anele Mdepa.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.